This is the ColoradoHockey.com podcast brought to you by AbsFam. That's ABSFAM.com. The coolest hockey shirts you'll ever find online, ready for you. Go get one. So today was a really cool day. We were talking to Jeff, who was giving us his How I Became an Abs Fan story that we'll post later on AbsFam.com. How many times can I say Abs Fan? Anyways, Jeff and I started just kind of talking hockey, talking about the old days, talking about Detroit, talking about the rivalries and Corey Perry and enforcers and people who stir the pot. Good authentic hockey talk. And then I got to thinking, this is awesome. We should put this on a podcast for everyone else to hear, because that's what you do. You share it with like-minded people who like the same sport and the team, and you have conversations. So if you would like to be involved in that conversation, which you should get a hold of me. We'll record it and share it with the rest of the world. So without further ado, here's Jeff, and he's starting off with a conversation about how he met Claude Lemieux and had a couple of different interactions with him.
Oh, yeah. Claude was great, because when he would come into Toys R Us, and the first time he came in, I recognized him right off the get-go, and he, of course, he had his big New Jersey Stanley Cup championship ring on there, and he was just a really nice guy. I told him, man, I know that he's busy and traveling and things like that, you know, and so if you want to just call in, you know, give me your list, and I can try to get your stuff for you, whatever you would like. And so what he did is he would call in and say, hey, you know, I'll come in, and I'll if you can get this, I'll spend 20 minutes signing autographs for people, so just let them know that I'll be coming in. And you know, and so Patrick Wall did that a lot too. So while they were signing autographs, we would do the we'd get everything ready for them, and so they can just have a good quick checkout and stuff. So, but Claude gave me he got me tickets to on the Red Wings games, and for the playoffs. And so, I'm always a huge Claude Lemieux fan. That guy played the game with fierce intensity. So, I've always kind of appreciated what he did, and just as a person, he was just an incredibly nice guy.
Yeah, that's awesome. I have to kind of, I connect with him a little bit, because I'm sort of the same kind of hockey player where my intentions are all good, but I have a certain kind of fight or flight about me that sometimes causes a little drama on the ice. So I always appreciated him, because even when that happened, he kind of held it together and stood up to the oncoming onslaught of Detroit players coming out.
Oh, yeah.
There was rough times back then. That was quite the rivalry we had.
Yeah, I don't really care what they say. There hasn't been another rivalry quite like that. I mean, as fans, you know, we definitely don't like Minnesota Wild at all.
Right.
You know, I think we have the same distaste for them as we do with the Red Wings. But for the players, you know, I don't see that absolute hatred of, you know, of other teams and stuff like that. I mean, that was something that was just a special era in hockey that I just don't see will ever happen again.
It really was. It almost gives me chills to think about it, because it was two of the elite teams at the time, and the rivalry was real. There was a lot of dislike for each other, but at the same time, and I think especially retrospectively or later on, there was a lot of respect at the same time too. You hear some of these guys talk that were involved in that, and they're talking about how, you know, it was definitely a real situation, but now they have a lot of respect for those guys, and they actually talk to them and hang out with them sometimes.
Yeah. Well, we had a chance to meet Chris Draper. And my kids are in gymnastics, and they go all over the country. And Chris Draper has a nephew that lives in Northwest Arkansas, and so Chris Draper came down and went to see one of those matches. And so, he just happened to sit right in front of us. And I was like, so I turned to my wife. I was like, yeah, I go that's Chris Draper for the Red Wings. And she's like, oh. And so my son goes, is that the dirty hockey player that doesn't take showers?
Wow.
I was like, well, he might take a few showers. And he just turned around and just like, oh, come on now. I wasn't that dirty. I was like,
yeah.
Well, Well, you're definitely, you know, you played with a couple of linemates that definitely were, and unfortunately, you know, the birds of a feather flock together. So
that's funny. Yeah, I'm a huge hockey fan. Though. Yeah, all these guys. I mean, they're NHL hockey players. They're the elite of the elite, and what they do is not easy. And there's always going to be the guys that are the bad guys. But I have respect for all of them. Just I happen to have all my favorites here in Colorado. But I'm a hockey fan first. Well, I'm an Avalanche fan first, and then just general hockey. So I don't dislike a lot of them. There's a couple players who I truly, truly hate. Like Lucic is not one of my favorite guys in the world. Matt Cook is also a guy I just really don't like. And then Corey Perry, I really dislike him. Unless somehow he was on our team, then I could maybe learn to like him. I'm not sure yet. I just know he's a really good player, but man, can he stir the pot.
Yeah, I just say that guy, I think he's my least favorite hockey player out there right now. I just, he gets away with more than anyone else I've ever seen.
Right, we're talking about Corey Perry now, right?
Yeah, Corey Perry,
I agree. And that's one of those things where, I mean, the thing is he's so good at the same time. So it's really frustrating because if he was just kind of a thug or a punk out there, that'd be fine. You know, he would be dealt with accordingly. But he does that stuff and then he turns around and scores a hat trick on you. And it's just, I don't know. I shake my head as I'm sitting here saying it. But at the same time, I don't know if I would dislike having somebody like that on our team, you know. I miss the days of the Ricci or our kind of our pests or people who kind of just kind of got everyone else going, got them off their game, got them emotional. I don't know if we really have that right now.
No, you know, and I mean, we definitely don't. And I see a lot of people say, you know, that we need to take that out of the game anyways. But I don't, I don't think you do.
I don't think so either.
I mean, I don't respect Alex Burrows at all. You know, it was his diving antics and stuff like that. But he does get under people's skin, and he changes the conflicts of the game.
He does, and it's entertaining whether or not, you know, you truly love it. I mean, you can't always have your team win and win every fight and score all the goals and never have anything go on. And it's part of the game. What I found is the game kind of polices itself a little bit. And the reason that you don't see the traditional enforcer is because it's just not really that kind of game anymore. The coaches don't have a spot for a guy like that anymore because the players are playing a different game. And, you know, a lot of that's the rules that they bring in and things like that. But it's a different game than it used to be right now. And I think that the time for the pest is now. I think the time for the enforcer is probably past, or at least that traditional one like a Scott Parker or a Chris Simon, people like that.
Yeah, and you just need to roll four lines. You can't win. Rolling three lines. It takes everything you have to be offensive. You know, in fact, it takes more than three guys nowadays. You know, so I think you do need to have the fresh legs and give a little bit of rest. I mean, guys are more fit now than they ever have been too. So.
Yeah, and it's not one of those things where guys are coming into camp not ready to go. These guys have been working out the whole time.
Yeah,
I agree with you. You have to have four lines, especially in our division. I mean, we are in a tough division. There's really no room to make a mistake bigger than, you know, a couple of games losing skid or something. Otherwise, you're just out of the playoffs, even though you're going to have bigger numbers than some of the other divisions.
Oh, yeah. This has probably been the toughest division in sports in probably the last 50 years. It's brutal, but you know what? I think it helps the young, you know, the Avs a little bit too. You know, playing that tougher competition, and we're younger than most of the other teams anyway. So you know, we'll get our day.
I think so. I think we're a hungry team, and we're putting it together. And a lot of guys are really young. I mean, Duchesne, I think, has been in the league for 5 or 6 years now. And I don't even know if he's 25 yet. I'm not really sure. I'm not this guy who knows all these amazing stats, but.
Yeah, because he started out at 18, and he's in the sixth year, and he's 24.
And that's amazing to me. It seems like he's been here forever, and the guy, you know, he's only been drinking legally for 4 or 5 years, so.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I remember when he was in the All-Star game, and he definitely wasn't 21 yet, and there was a camera on him, and you could hear him talking about his legs were like Jell-O from drinking all that vodka the night before.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that was great.
And if it sounds like that one just dropped off, that's because it did. We didn't really set out to do a podcast. It just happened. Kind of like fights just happen in hockey or something like that. Anyways, we want you to do a podcast with us too, if that's your thing. If you have hockey to talk and you want to do it for the rest of the world to hear, get a hold of me. We'll set it up. It'll be awesome. In other news, all right, so don't go anywhere because we got a lot to talk about today. Up next is Steven Crociata, and he's going to tell us a little bit about what he thinks is really going on with the Avalanche, not the symptoms, the root cause. Here he is.
What is it that they say about insanity? That it's doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results? I love the confidence of the Avalanche fans, but unfortunately, that's kind of where I feel that I'm at right now. You know, I watched the team, and in the offseason, they made additions that were pretty exciting. And the reason I call them additions and not changes is because that's where I see there being a problem. I feel like the Avalanche, instead of addressing the problems, just added pieces that would benefit the team on a whole, without really fixing what was causing the problems. The way I kind of have equated it to is, you know, if your house smells bad, just spraying Febreze all over the place instead of finding the source of the smell. And that's where I feel that the Avalanche have put themselves. Instead of addressing the needs that were hurting the team last year and the year before, even when they had success, they just covered it up with some pretty pieces in acquiring Zadorov and, you know, signing Boschman and even Carl Soderberg and Blake Como. And these are pieces that you can get excited for and you enjoy watching them play. But do they change the real problems that the Avalanche had last season? You know, a lines that are just incomplete and result in poor possession. A couple of defenders who still play game in and game out, whether it's Stewart once in a while, Genin and Holden, who have played essentially every game. You have guys who can't get the puck out of the zone. And it's pretty much because there's so much incomplete among the Avalanche, between the lines and the pairings. You have a great piece like Zadorov, who has to be paired with Genin. They tried Barry, but maybe they thought it was too top-heavy, or because of Barry's struggles, they decided to change that. So what you end up with is a lot of great pieces with very little complement. And I feel like that's what's really been making the Avs struggle in terms of possession. You know, you think about players like Matt Duchene, who, as great as Jerome McGinley has been in his career, has definitely slowed down a bit. And we've seen the same thing with Alex Tanguay. And I feel like that's a very, very big smack on the Avs possession as well. You have guys like Landeskog and MacKinnon running up the ice while Tanguay trails behind, just, you know, a step slower. And I feel like that makes a really big impact on the consistency of these lines and how they're actually able to get some things done. You know, the Avalanche and Patrick Roy and Joe Sakic specifically have kind of grinded into our heads the process. And I'm not going to say that, you know, they've brainwashed Avalanche fans. I'm happy that Avalanche fans are confident and excited. But I'm a realist. You know, I look at everything and I'm very rational. And I'm not going to say that this team has taken huge steps. I think that they've made some quality additions. But are you really taking a step forward if you don't change the things that are causing the problems? And that's my biggest concern. It's not that I like to be negative. You know, I've seen a lot of, unfortunately, on social media, Avs fans have kind of gone at each other. Some, you know, for being too positive, others for being too negative. If you're too positive, that doesn't mean that you don't want to see the team win. And if you're too negative, that doesn't mean that you're not a fan. It's just, some of us are a little bit more rational and others, you know, they don't look at the game as so much, you know, in a technical way. They see a team that looks more exciting, so obviously that's what they'd rather watch, and I understand that completely. But mentally, I'm going to look at things as the long run, and even only being 5 games in, I'm looking at game 82 and where the Avalanche sit in the standings. And as they stand now, not based on the games, because they could be 4-1 at this point, that doesn't change the outlook for the team down the line. And I don't see a playoff team. I don't even see a team that's going to eclipse the 90 points that they had last year. And that has nothing to do with projections based on the fact that they've won 2 out of 5. That has nothing to do with it. It's just the way that the team is formed. Last year, they laid so much of the pressure on Varlamov, and he stood up. He was great. Now, you can't expect a phenomenal performance every single time out. When all is said and done, he will be the starter at the end of the season, unless something crazy happens and, you know, Red O'Bara goes on to have 40 shutouts. Obviously, that's not going to happen. They're going to give Semyon Varlamov his job back. And when that time comes, if he's not, you know, at the very, very top of the goalie game, the Avalanche just aren't going to be able to survive day in and day out. And that's a lot of pressure to put on one guy. You know, the team has its benefits. They're going to win games, you know, 6-5. They're going to lose games 2-1. The score is not always going to impact exactly how the team played. And I don't want to be one of those Corsi junkies who puts everything on possession, but it's become such an integral part of the game now. And, I mean, how can you fight that? You know, how do you expect to win games when you're being outshot 40-20 and outchanced, you know, 10-1? And, you know, shots now are not just shots on goal. Obviously, we look at shots towards net, block shots. And the Avalanche, game in and game out, it seems to be 75-30 on those shot attempts. And you can't win games that way. You know, any other sport that you look at it, you're going to see something similar. In football, if the time of possession is 40 minutes to 20 minutes, there's a pretty good chance a team with the 40 minutes of possession time wins the game. Not always, but often. And that usually also indicates who the better team was. And obviously the better team doesn't always win the games. But over the course of an 82-game season, the likely outcomes are going to be the better teams win. And it's somewhere where the Avalanche just don't sit right now. So, you know, I know I'm rambling, but it's something that you've watched for the past 2+ years, well beyond that. Obviously, those stats started being looked at for over the past 2 years heavily, but the team just has not fixed those issues. And I know they want to try to add these great pieces, but all I see is a cover-up. I don't see a real tackling of these problems. And until they do, I'm afraid that the Avalanche may just be pretenders. I want them to be contenders. And, you know, that really means a changing of game plan, not always a changing of personnel. And I think that's where the Avalanche lie.
So in full disclosure, that was recorded a couple days ago. And when he says that they could be 4-0, they could be 6-0, I guess is what you should take from that. Either way, it was a good piece and it's a good balance right now. I'm definitely an optimist. I'm a fanboy. I think they're going to win every single game and I don't want to see anyone traded ever. But that's probably not the most logical way to look at it. Regardless, I said this before and I'll say it again. What I like is passion. I like people who have something to say and they say it intelligently. They're not out to hurt somebody's feelings. They're not being a troll. That's absolutely the case with Steven and for most of you on Twitter. For the rest of you, just keep it cool, man. That's just life. It'll keep going. It's cool. So a couple of things that came up in that are definitely worth looking at. Something's up with Alex Tanguay. I don't know if he's hurt or he's not digging the system or he's just in a bad funk right now, but he's not playing very good hockey. He is trying, but it's not really working that well. I'd like to see him get his game back together. And on the flip side of that, Jerome McGinley, he's actually doing pretty good right now. He's not dominating, but he's not in that weird little slump that we all pretend that he has. On a previous call, AJ Hayfleet was nice enough to point out to me that this idea that Jerome McGinley is a slow starter is actually a myth. Of all of his years in the NHL, there's been two that were really kind of statistically slow, but it does seem like since he's been here, he's maybe a little bit slow as he gets going. This is an okay season so far. We'll see what he does, but all the players need to pick it up. Everyone needs to get their game together. And on that note, here's a recap of the last game, Game 6, the Canes at Avs, in a close game that ended up kind of going down the toilet.
Wednesday night proved to be a tough one for the Avs as they dropped a 1-0 overtime loss to the Carolina Hurricanes. A couple things that I want to mention about the game. The team itself looked good. I will give them credit. It was actually one of the better performances from start to finish for the Avs this season. It's tough to say that in a game when you don't score any goals, but I think there is a lot of good to take from what happened on the ice. My issue is more with the game management. Number one, Nick Holden playing more time than anybody else on ice is an issue. It's not that Holden has played bad this season. It's just there are better players and there are better opportunities when other guys are on the ice. Him having more time on ice than Johnson and Boschman and Zadorov, it's not how the game should be set up. Granted, I know Zadorov is held back because of Gannon's time on ice, but then you have to double shift guys, you have to move things around. There's no reason that Holden should have 24 minutes while Gormley has 17, and now you're looking at Zadorov with 15. That just should not set up that way. Time management works in the other way as well. Mikko Rantanen probably had his best game of the season last night, and he still only gets almost 11 minutes on ice. That just should not sit up that way. This kid is young. He is a growing player, and keeping him off the ice is only going to hold back that growth. There's no reason for why he should be getting so little time on ice, especially when he's playing a bulk of his time with Matt Duchene and Jerome Iginla. Why is he not on the ice with them for every shift? There's no reason to move that around. He looked phenomenal last night. Let him get the ice. Another guy who looked really good last night was Mikhail Grigorenko, and yet he only got under 6 minutes of ice time. There's no reason for that. If a guy looks good, you get him on the ice. The Avs have done this with way lesser players than Grigorenko and Rantanen. I've seen McLeod get upwards of 16 minutes on games that he happened to just look good that day. So I don't see why some of these guys can't get more time. Another issue I take was some of the line changes. Now, while players can make judgment calls on a line change, the coaching staff on the bench sees the entire ice. They know exactly what's happening. And on multiple occasions, I saw really bad line changes result in Carolina rushes. And that ultimately led to the goal that ended the game, as Carolina had the puck around center ice. And for whatever reason, the Avalanche decided to attempt a line change as Carolina was starting their rush. What do you know? Landeskog ends up pretty much being the only guy back, is not able to make a play, and the goal is scored to end the game. These are things that I really think have to be worked on. The Avalanche get a lot of flack for some of the guys that they put on the ice, but I'm starting to think it may be more of a coaching problem than an issue with player personnel.
I hate losing. Such a horrible conversation the next day, but you know what? That is Chris Yata playing the role of Adrian Dater there. It's not a popular opinion, but there's a lot of truth in it, and he could just be right. I don't even know. Right now, what I know is that the Avs aren't the team I thought they'd be by this point, and we're 6 games in. I promised that I wouldn't freak out until we got 10 games in, so I'm going to hold on to that. But I have to say, I'm waiting for it to gel. I'm waiting for it to come together. I'm waiting for the big reveal when everything just starts working and we get on this roll. I think it will happen. I hope it'll happen. And either way, I'm going to keep watching because I'm a fanboy. All right, there's no way we're going to end this on a negative note. Who needs to do that and have a sucky day? Here's what you should do. You should go over to avsfan.com and check out the How I Became an Avs Fan story. There's two new ones up there. Both of them are awesome. The latest one came from Avs Girl in Canada, Toronto, maybe? Anyways, it's awesome. It's one I've been wanting to get for a long time, and it'll warm your heart. It'll make you happy. It'll make you forget about the last game and get you ready for the next game. It's that good. Go check it out, avsfam.com. Stay awesome.